do want to start with the Leafs before we get into some of the more heavy lifting after. They got a game tonight, and the common theory around this group, David, is that, hey, that five-game honeymoon phase, that's over. We've acclimated to a new coach now. Are you going to keep up the good habits? Is there anything that leads you to believe that they wouldn't?
Well, I mean, I don't even know if you want to call them good habits. I mean, they're still – I mean, Freddie Anderson was absolutely sensational on Saturday. I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but if it wasn't Freddie Anderson in that and it was one of the other goalies on this Leafs roster, they wouldn't have won probably. They would have lost by a few goals. So I don't know if the habits have so much changed. I think there's a certain comfort playing this style. These guys seem a little bit more liberated playing the style, and I know we've talked about that, and I've heard you guys talking about it on the show. The handcuffs are off, but they still need good goaltending. It is still predicated in outscoring our mistakes, and we have a solid goaltender in net. And yes, Freddie's in net tonight, but we all know tomorrow you guys play the Clip. Like, what's going to happen on Wednesday night against the Avalanche? And that's where this is becoming a very real problem. You can't run out your backup goalie 15, 16, 18, 22 times and not win a game. I mean, you just won't make it to the playoffs. So they're going to have to figure it out. And I heard the clip from Keith leading in about, you know, Freddie, it's a long-term plan. That's fine and dandy. It's only December. But you won't play in April unless you start getting some points from your backup goalie. So they've got to figure this out in pretty quick fashion. I know they've got, I think, two more back-to-backs this month, or maybe even three more back-to-backs this month. So it's a definitive, you know, real problem the Leafs have to address. But as far as the honeymoon being over, yeah, I think that's a really valid point. I think people are sort of looking at the standings and looking at this team and sort of saying, okay, well, let's see this go through a longer stretch of time with Sheldon Keefe where the wins are there. But the early returns have been great, right? 8 out of 10 points, right? So you certainly can't complain so far.
I agree with you totally on the Frederick Anderson situation. He has been a star for this team. And listen, quite frankly, he's been bailing out this group for years. It hasn't just been this year. I think it's amplified this year because the backup performances have been substandard at best at times. So do you foresee a situation where, hey, regardless of our long-term plans, we just need to buckle down with him. We need to hunker down, and he's going to play the majority of the games. There's going to be no rest for the wicked in this case because you're right. We have to lock down a playoff position. We have to try and get home ice advantage, and the rest we deal with later.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to look the problem in the eye right now, and planning ahead for how fresh he'll be in April doesn't, you know, it's a foolhardy plan when there won't be an April.
Yeah.
You know, we've been doing the math for a little while now, guys, right? If the magic number is 96, 98 points, which is what it's going to be, last year it was 98 points, the Leafs are going to have to, I don't have, you know, I'm driving in my car and I don't have it in front of me, but they're going to have to go something like 34 and 20 or something like that, or 33 and 21. I mean, that's a legitimate stretch of consistent good hockey. You just can't afford every time you throw your backup in to come out of there allowing five goals and losing. And, you know, had Kaskasuo, you know, played great, he'd probably be in net right now. Like, they don't have a ton of faith in Hutchinson. I'm not buying that narrative. Oh, yeah, we were just wanting him to season down in the AHL. They just don't have a better option right now. They really don't.
David Amber is our guest. He's the host of the NHL on Sportsnet, one of the hosts on Hockey Night in Canada. Our insider brought to you by McAlpine Ford Lincoln in Aurora.
Montreal Canadiens now 8 straight losses. Claude Julien is searching for answers. He doesn't know. He's blaming the ref for calls. It's ugly in Montreal. Does he even have the team to have a winning team there? Does he have the players to kind of get out of this? Or is this more of a coaching change that you think they need to do?
Well, I definitely don't think they need a coaching change. I mean, Claude Julien, I think, is one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League, and he's done a pretty darn good job everywhere he's been, including the Stanley Cup run in Boston. So I don't think it's a coaching issue. I think, you know, there's a lack of depth up front, and we said that. That was sort of the question mark surrounding this team when the season began, and I think it's now reared its head. I mean, Drouin got injured, and Byron got injured, and suddenly it was like, uh-oh, we don't have a ton of depth up front. And it's funny, if you look at the Habs' last game, guys, it'll go down as a 3-1 loss to the Bruins, and people are, oh, Carey Price, you know, he let in 3 goals in the third. And that's true, But part of the equation is it's 1-0. Brendan Gallagher has a clear-cut breakaway and is stopped. And, you know, it's not a lock you're going to score on a breakaway, but you kind of need your scorers to bear down sometimes too and provide a little bit of insurance, a little bit of comfort. So, you know, Max Domi got up to a really strong start this year. He's sort of quieted down. Brendan Gallagher has been consistent, but, you know, he's not a 40-goal scorer. He's more like a 28-goal scorer. And, you know, where is this high-end offense? And that's what Mark Bergevin, I think, has to ask himself. You know, he went out and tried to get Sebastian Aho unsuccessfully. But when you look at that division, I mean, go up and down that division, guys. You got the Marners, the Matthews, you got the Eichels, you got the Barkovs and Huberdeaux, you've got the Kucherov and Stamkos, you got the Pastrnak line. I mean, every single competitive team in the Atlantic has superstars up front, you know, top-tier guys. The Montreal Canadiens have good forwards, but they don't have great forwards, and that's the question. And then a couple of them get injured, and here we are. Yes, the defensive lapses have played a big role, but I think it's more the personnel, and that's what Mark Bergevin, they've got salary cap space to give. I don't know. I imagine Bergevin's working the phones and trying to figure something out, but to me, that's the big question mark. Why aren't they going out and making a big deal and landing some of that offensive prowess that must be available around the league?
Do you think they can still win with Price in net?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Do you don't?
I don't think he's in his prime anymore. I think they have to move on from him. I think he's going to end up in Seattle when they start their season. Yeah, and it's I don't think he's the guy that he once was, and that's when the Montreal Canadiens were the Montreal Canadiens when they were a really good team. I mean, I don't see them as the same team as they had. And I mean, you got to remember at that time, you also had PK Subban. He was at the top of his career, right? He was unstoppable almost when they had him.
Yeah, I see it differently. I mean, I think if we did this on Hockey Night on Saturday, Carey Price's last November was similar to this November. It was a disaster. Then he righted himself and he was exceptional the rest of the way. And the Habs missed the playoffs by 2 points. If anything, to me, I look at their special teams. Last year it was the power play. This year it's the PK that's just near the bottom of the league. It's very hard to operate when, you know, every time the other team has a man advantage, the puck's ending up in the back of your net. So I think that's part of the equation. Carey Price had a horrible month, granted that, but I'm not ready to sort of throw in the towel on who he is and what he's been. I expect him to rebound. I agree. Might not be in his prime, but he's 33 years old. He's not 38 years old. So I fully expect Carey Price to have a rebound. I think really it's going to be incumbent on the team to be able to get some more scoring. I think that's a big part of the equation. That's a big part of the problem. And until that's been addressed, it's going to be trouble, I think, for the team because they just don't have a deep roster of bona fide guys who you can trust to score.
With David Amber.
That's probably, you know, the number one problem. Sorry, go on.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
He's like, yeah, go on. Say my name. Yeah. Say my title. Nails it loud, baby.
He is the host of the NHL on Sportsnet and one of the hosts of Hockey Night in Canada. Bergevin is Mark Bergevin, the general manager, is a very popular guy. You know, I've had the opportunity to work with people who played with him, and I mean, he's a prankster, a jokester, great sense of humor, highly regarded around the game. But I wonder at what point, David, if Jeff Molson, the owner of the team, reaches his limit with Bergevin, because some of the issues that have plagued the Montreal Canadiens have gone on for years now.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question. I think, listen, I wish I had my notes in front of me, but they have not missed the playoffs in back-to-back seasons, I think, in like 50 years or something crazy like that. And that's what they're staring down right now. This isn't a franchise that's used to this sort of level of mediocrity. You know, it's been, what, 26 years and counting since they've won a Stanley Cup. Their patience is pretty thin in Montreal at the best of times. And you got to ask yourself, how close to a championship is this team? You know, and you got to look individually at the moves Bergevin's made, and some of them have been pretty good, and some of them haven't been so good. You know, the Pacioretty trade's looking pretty good. You know, they have Nick Suzuki there, and they got Tatar, et cetera. The PK trade at first was a disaster. Nashville gets to the final, but now I think people are sort of saying, wow, you know, Weber's a good, he's our captain, he's a stabilizing force, and PK's career right now is sort of been on a little bit in neutral. But, you know, I do think there's this feeling that he needs to do something dramatic, and the patience is it's slim right now. Scott, I think you bring up a really good point. I think if there's heat, we saw in this market the heat was clearly on Babcock. I think in that market, the heat is much more on Marc Bergevin. I don't think people are calling for Claude Julien's head right now.
Well, and David, the other thing is this team has cap space, and they have had cap space for 2 or 3 years now. I am working off the pretty confident assumption that if the Toronto Maple Leafs were, say, $10 million under the cap and were not performing up to snuff, that's what we'd be screaming about.
Absolutely. 100%. They have cap space. So they have, it's now about being creative and finding, whether it's Taylor Hall, putting together a package and getting Taylor Hall, or whether it's earmarking someone else who might be available, you know, who's a pending free agent or a bad contract for another team, or a guy who's worn out his welcome in another market, and identifying that person and saying, you know, we want to make a trade with this team, or identifying a team that sort of is thrown in the towel for this year, and you can give them futures, but you get a present bona fide, legitimate top six forward or two. I think he has to get creative right now. I really do. And, you know, I guess some people would say, well, he tried to make the offer sheet to Aho. A lot of people looked at that as there, if you really wanted Aho there, you make it so prohibitive to Carolina that you'll get Aho. And were they ready to do that? I don't know. I mean, it didn't, there was, you know, it was somewhat front loaded, et cetera, but a lot of people thought there was no way Carolina won't match this. And, you know, and ultimately they said within a couple hours, they issued a statement saying we're going to match this. So, you know, I just think it's time for him to get creative, find what sort of solutions there might be, and go from there. You know, at this point right now, the heat is on Marc Bergevin, and rightfully so, because if you look at, you know, the recent track record of the Montreal Canadiens, it's certainly not up to where it should be. And as you said, Scott, most importantly, they have money to make that problem possibly go away.
When you mentioned Taylor Hall, listen, this is going to be the hottest name once the trade deadline comes a little closer. I mean, we're already talking about it now. We were already talking about it over the summer, and the New Jersey Devils did themselves no favors in trying to re-sign him or wanting him to stay with the way that they performed. They just got slapped last night by the Buffalo Sabres 7-1, the final score. So when you think about Taylor Hall and potential destinations, do you think it would be smarter for teams to wait as long as possible to maybe get the New Jersey Devils in a panic position? And I think sometimes, David, we make a little bit too much of this waiting out a team situation when the trade deadline is around. Some guys just have a price and that's it. But I wouldn't expect there to be a move until closer to February. And do you agree or disagree?
Well, that's interesting. You know what? You know, Shiro has to figure out, you know, Ray Shiro, GM of, the Devils really has to figure out where the marketplace is. Will there be more teams come trade deadline, or will there be fewer teams come trade deadline? And I remember Ottawa waited around with Mark Stone, if you guys remember. And, you know, Pierre Dorion, in a way, I think they got decent returns. But everyone's like, how did they not get a first-round pick?
Yeah.
They, I think, got a second and Brännström, right? If that's not, that's correct, right?
I checked
that for you. Yeah, and people thought they waited too long. And where other guys were going for first-round picks, they got a second-round pick. So I think you got to sense the marketplace. One thing I'll say is I think they want to do something sooner than later in Jersey because it's a tire fire there right now. And, I mean, they gave up 5 goals in the first period to Buffalo yesterday. Taylor Hall was playing on the third line, so you also don't want it to be a diminishing return.
Yeah.
If he's lighting it up, you know, that's one thing. But you don't want him 20 games from now to be, you know, to have 5 goals in 50 games. And so this guy's great. Like, give me your first rounder. Give me your firstborn child. And they're going to be like, no, he's not performing like the MVP 2 years ago. So I think all of that gets factored in. To me, I think the Taylor Hall move is going to be more sooner than later. That's my gut feel on this. I think this is something that's going to happen in the weeks leading up to the trade deadline as opposed to at the trade deadline.
And I know people are really reluctant to give up their firstborn, but sometimes if a colicky baby is kind of in the house, you might consider it.
Gotta get your sleep.
The Ottawa trade, Mark Stone to Vegas, Brandstrom, Lindbergh in a second round, yes.
Well, here's, and to your point about it possibly happening sooner, David, I wonder then if a team, and Montreal is the example we've been talking about, but if a team that needs to make a move, that needs to add, that has been middling along for far too long in the eyes of its diehard fan base, isn't likely or more likely to make a move like this in an attempt to, quote, save its season. Right? Because Montreal, if they're in on Taylor Hall, they can't afford to wait 6 weeks. Because 6 weeks from now, could be over. Like, you got to get in on this.
And think about this. I mean, he changes the dynamic there. They finally have what many would consider a bona fide star elite forward. Again, he's, what, a year and a half removed from being the MVP of the league. So, yeah, the question, I guess, for Montreal is Taylor Hall, if we're going to pursue him, is he a rental or do we think we can sign him to a deal? Mark Stone was traded to Vegas, and within an hour, he had a 8-year, you know, $76 million deal, I believe, signed. So they've got to ask themselves, do they want Taylor Hall long term? Is that their solution? And can they do that? And there's a lot of rumblings in talking to our insiders, the Chris Johnstons and Elliot Friedmans. They believe Taylor Hall is not going to sign a long term deal. He wants to go to free agency. So if that's the case, then, you know, you have to ask what you're going to give up. Are you going to give up Nick Suzuki? Are you going to give up Kotkaniemi? Are you going to give up those types of players to land a Taylor Hall, especially if he's a rental? So you got to ask yourself the question, you know, what kind of level of addition and subtraction are you going to have to go through? But, yes, I do think if you're Montreal, you're not waiting until – but it's over in February unless you turn things around right now. So there's no point in February 24th at the deadline trying to get Taylor Hall. By then – you know, the ship has sailed. So I like to think these are the phone calls that are being made right now. And I'm sure there's a lot of teams inquiring, how can we make this happen? You know, on headlines, they were talking about the Edmonton Oilers being very in hot pursuit of Taylor Hall. That would be really interesting. They don't have salary cap space right now, but they can make it happen. You know, you get rid of one of those $4 million defensemen and you add Taylor Hall and there you go. Because that's how the math would work, essentially. If you move out a few million dollars, you can move in Taylor Hall, who's now, I guess, about $3 million on the cap for the rest of the year. So it would be really interesting to see him back in Edmonton. I think that would be the juiciest storyline. Imagine that. Because it didn't work out so well with Hall and McDavid in McDavid's rookie year. But, you know, it's a very different situation now.
Yeah, it would be a big full circle situation. Kind of like having you on the phone last night. Drinks with the team at the Christmas party this morning, getting run over by your, what I can only assume is a Range Rover as you subtle flex. I'm in my car. It's a Lexus this morning.
wrong. But no, honestly, it's impressive, Ashley. I couldn't do it. I don't know how you're doing it, but kudos to you. Well done.
Thank you so much, sir. I'm nothing if not professional, is what they tell me.
Be real, David. You're that guy on the DVP in the Civic with the spoiler, right? Come on.
And an exhaust.
No DVP, but it's close. You're very close.
Going 35 over the speed limit and tailgating.
I'm dead with like a dashboard crown.
Always good to chat, David. We'll do it again next week. Thanks, bud.
All right, guys. Happy holidays to all of you. Talk to you guys soon.
You bet.
Thanks, David.
David Amber, host of the NHL on Sportsnet.